Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
Welcome to another edition of Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 a.m. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Happy as always to be along with you on the afternoon drive as we talk both local and national sports. And today we're going to focus heavily on Super Bowl 52. Now, KOAL will bring you live coverage beginning at noon on Sunday. And then we'll stick with Westwood One throughout the game. You'll hear the live call. And then, of course, some post-game coverage as well as the Patriots and the Eagles get set to battle for football's biggest prize. We're going to talk to Brian Mejia, our NFL Drive Time Sports Insider today. Brian's joined us all year long to talk NFL football, so of course we got to get him on and get his thoughts on what's going to be the biggest weekend of the year for the sport. I'm so glad we're finally at the game. I don't know about you, but every year I go through the same thing with the Super Bowl. I love the playoffs. I think the most competitive, the best week of the NFL season, it is the divisional round. Once we get past the wild card set, it is the best time for football's the divisional round. For the most part, every game is going to be competitive. You're talking about the best eight teams. I love the divisional round. You get to the AFC Championship, there's so much momentum. AFC-NFC Championship game, so much momentum. And then you claim the conference champs, and then we get 2 weeks off in between the Super Bowl. And it seems like we talk about the same thing for two straight weeks. And the Pro Bowl was good this year, but the Pro Bowl is just not a talking point for me. It's probably my least favorite. Well, it was my least favorite. It may have surpassed the NBA now. One of my least favorite professional sport all-star games. And so that just doesn't seem like a talking point to me. But now we're gearing up for the big game tomorrow, and we'll break it down a little bit. I'll tell you, I still think that the Eagles have a legitimate chance in this game. I don't think they win it, but I think they definitely make it interesting. We'll talk more about that coming up in just a bit. As far as tonight goes, local sports-wise, well, the Carbon Dinos will get a break. There's no USU Eastern basketball, but the Emory Spartans will return to the court. Big game tonight. They take on the Manti Templars. And the way the standings have set up, this is what's crazy about the region that Emory plays in. They were on the verge of falling out of the top six in the seven-team region. On the verge of actually falling all the way to last place. They beat North Sam Pete on Wednesday. And now a win tonight, and Emory is magically third place. That's how close, that's how tight this division is. Huge game tonight for the Spartans. Live coverage is going to begin at 6:30 with the Landon's Diesel Service pregame show. Myself, alongside Scott Labrum, will bring you the play-by-play call. And if you missed it, Kyson Stilson joined us in the broadcast booth just the other day. We played that interview on Drive Time Sports. You'll hear that tonight. You'll hear from Coach Todd Jeffs as well. And, of course, we'll get you out ahead of the pro rehab starting lineups tonight. So gearing up for some more high school basketball action. It's the first of three games in 2 days here on KOAL. Tomorrow we have doubleheader action on the USU Eastern basketball court. Both the women and the men will be in action tomorrow, taking on the College of Southern Idaho. Greg Dart and Sonny Buscarini will bring the play-by-play call for the women, and then myself alongside Chris Winfrey will deliver the call for the men. So it is going to be a very busy weekend sports-wise, but that's exactly how we like it. Let's take a look at some of the headlines in the national sports front. No surprise here in the NBA, the Boston Celtics and center Greg Monroe, free agent center Greg Monroe, have come to an agreement on a one-year, $5 million contract. Monroe's going to clear waivers tomorrow. He agreed on a contract buyout with the Phoenix Suns. He chose Boston over the Pelicans. The Pelicans offered, I think, like $2.5 million, but the Celtics had that $8.4 million disabled player exception, which they got when Gordon Hayward went down with a season-ending injury. And so Monroe was able to just slide in there. He got a bigger payday from the Celtics. I think he's going to fit in beautifully with the Celtics. And this is another aspect you got to pay attention to. Monroe agreed to a contract buyout. He was owed $17.8 million. So he becomes an unrestricted free agent once he clears waivers tomorrow. But he gets a buyout there, then he gets an additional $5 million from the Celtics. He's only 27 years old, was a hot free agent a couple of seasons ago. He's averaged just under 12 points, 8 boards, and 23 minutes a game this season with the Suns. Now, before he was dealt to Phoenix earlier this year, he was playing with the Bucks, where he was really just a non-factor. In Boston, he may actually be a major player. I know sometimes you see these free agent acquisitions mid-season, and it's tough for these guys to find a sticking point. I think he's going to be fine in Boston. I mean, the Celtics have had to lean heavily on Aaron Baines, and Baines has been brilliant defensively for the Celtics. In fact, their defensive rating it soars when Baines is on the court. Perfect compliment for Al Horford. On the flip side, I think that Monroe can spell Baines because we know that he's not a rim protector. He's an offensive big, and the league has kind of gone away from from players, the effectiveness of somebody in the role of Greg Monroe. That's the problem with Jahlil Okafor. The league has just kind of evolved in that sense where you don't really need a scoring big anymore with their back to the basket. That's not the way the game's played right now. But I think it's one of those rare things where Monroe is actually going to really have a lot of success in Boston. Rare in a sense where a free agent moves on, you know, after being bought out and has immediate success. I think that's what we see with Monroe. I love that signing for the Boston Celtics. Let's take a look at the schedule tonight in the NBA. We had a short slate last night of just 5 games, and there were some thrillers, including the Denver-Oklahoma City game in which Gary Harris Jr. thwarted a beautiful come-from-behind effort by the Thunder, knocks down a game winner, ends the contest in favor of Denver at home. Russell Westbrook was brilliant in this game last night, 21 points, 20 assists, 9 rebounds, but it wasn't enough. I mean, that was a thriller last night if you missed it. Tonight, we have some great games, I think, on tap. I love Indiana at Charlotte, 5 p.m. tip-off there. 5:30, we get Atlanta at Boston. The Lakers will travel to Brooklyn. The Raptors will play host to the Portland Trailblazers. 6 o'clock tonight on ESPN, we get Miami at Philadelphia. The Knicks travel to meet the Bucks. 7 o'clock, we get Oklahoma City playing host to New Orleans. We'll see if the Thunder can rebound from last night's buzzer-beating loss. The Jazz are on the road to take on the Phoenix Suns at 7 p.m. That game will not air here on KOAL. Instead, we'll get Emory High School basketball. And then in the nightcap tonight, Golden State on the road to take on the Sacramento Kings. So that's what's happening in the world of the NBA. I know we talked a little bit about LeBron James and the Golden State Warriors yesterday. LeBron addressed the media on that and said it's nonsense. Don't ask him questions about free agency anymore. He's not going to answer. It's unfair to his team. For the first time in a long time, I actually agree with something LeBron James says. Yeah, it is a distraction for his team. Has he checked out in Cleveland? I don't think he's checked out in Cleveland. I think it's different than the first go-round. Remember when he took his jersey off in Boston after they lost? I don't think that's the case here. I think LeBron is truly committed to Cleveland and trying to get this squad to right the ship. Non-issue is what LeBron says on that topic. And we got a great show lined up for you. In just a moment, we're going to be joined by Brian Mejia. We'll start breaking down Super Bowl 52. I want to get his thoughts on some of the awards as well. Alvin Kamara was named the NFL Rookie of the Year, Offensive Rookie of the Year. No surprise there. He was absolutely brilliant. And we're close to figuring out who's going to be the MVP. I know there was breaking news last night. Someone spotted a Tom Brady acceptance speech for the MVP award. Quarterbacks get it. Quarterbacks get it. 9 out of the last 10 MVPs have gone to a quarterback. Todd Gurley was like the third or fourth player in NFL history to accumulate 2,000 all scrimmage yards. He's still not going to get the MVP. It's going to go to Tom Brady. Right or wrong, quarterbacks get the love. They also get the blame. Works both ways. We'll talk some NFL football when we return here on Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. We begin with the high school basketball scene, and last night the Emory Lady Spartans won their 9th consecutive game, improving to 9-1 in Region 15 play by blasting through the Manti Templars 74-35 on the road. Emory held a commanding 45-13 lead at the end of the first half, and the second half was a mere formality. Lainey Jensen led the way for the Lady Spartans. She scored 23 points, knocking down 8 of 14 shots from the field. 14 points from Caitlin Toomer and 12 points from Megan Jensen was more than enough for Emory to secure the victory. Only 2 games remain on the regular season slate for the Lady Spartans. Next week, they'll continue the season. They'll take on the Grand Red Devils on the road, and then also, they'll meet the San Juan Broncos at home to close out the regular season. Stay tuned to Castle Country Radio. We'll catch up with Coach Lynn Tuttle next week to preview the final week of the regular season. Now we stick with the high school basketball tonight on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM. The Emory Spartan boys basketball team will return to the court. They'll take on the Manti Templars in a highly important Region 15 contest. Each game from here on out could mean seeding for the Emory Spartans. They snapped a two-game losing skid and earned their first victory on the road in the region season on Wednesday by defeating the North Stampede Hawks. Tonight, the Spartans have an opportunity to earn a season series split with the Manti Templars, and that would put them in a tie for third place in the division. Live coverage of tonight's contest is scheduled to begin at 6:30 p.m. Tip-off will follow shortly after at 7. It will be a very busy day on the wrestling scene. Both Carbon and Emory will travel on the road to the Sevier Valley Center to participate in the divisional tournament. This is the final stage before the state championship meet next week. And today, Emory and Carbon will have several individuals competing throughout different weight classes in hopes of reaching the final eight to qualify for the state championship. Each weight class has up to 16 participants, and again, the top eight will move on to the state meet next week at Utah Valley University. Stay tuned to Castle Country Radio. We'll go over the results from this weekend's meet as soon as they become available on Monday morning. We do have an extremely busy weekend of sports ahead on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. Tomorrow night, the USU Eastern Eagles men's and women's basketball squads will return to the court as they play host to the College of Southern Idaho. As it sits right now, USU Eastern's men's squad is looking for their third consecutive win. They were blown out by CSI the last go-around in Twin Falls, but most recently, the men upset number 4 Salt Lake Community College 83-79. That was this past Saturday. The women, on the other hand, are looking to snap a losing skid. They'll take on CSI, the same team that they lost to, by just 4 points earlier on in the season. If you can't make it out to the contests this weekend at the BDAC, you can always tune in to KOALITV.com. It's there you can watch the live broadcast and also pick up the radio feed, which you will hear on KOAL. And we end by moving over to the national sports scene. Sunday on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM, live coverage of Super Bowl 52 from Westwood One will begin at noon. Pre-game coverage will run until kickoff, which is scheduled for 4:30 p.m. And of course, the big game this year features the New England Patriots going for Super Bowl win number 6 with Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, as the Philadelphia Eagles look to continue their Cinderella story with backup quarterback Nick Foles. Again, live coverage of Super Bowl 52 will begin on KOAL at 12 p.m. on Sunday, and kickoff will take place at 4:30. You can find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
In 5, 4, 3, 2.
I'm Joe Wade Formicola, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
Real name, no gimmicks.
On 7:50 a.m., KOAL.
So I came to the grave. Real name, no gimmicks.
That's why I ain't got no.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM, 7:50 AM. We're going to continue to talk about Super Bowl 52. Now, do not forget, Sunday, right here on KOAL, our live coverage will begin at noon. Westwood One's coverage of the Super Bowl here on KOAL. And then at 4:30, we'll have kickoff for you. So you can follow the entire game, the lead up, and the post game coverage all right here on KOAL Sunday. Let's talk about Super Bowl 52 with Brian Mejia, our NFL Drive Time Sports Insider. He's joined us all year long, so of course he has to join us to break down Sunday's big game. Brian, it's always a pleasure to get you on, buddy. Thank you.
Always great to talk some NFL football. We started week one. We probably started in the preseason, but you know, we're here to the Super Bowl now, by a big surprise that the New England Patriots are playing for the Super Bowl again.
You know what? This has been a topic of discussion, and I feel like we've talked about this throughout the entire week, but I'll go back to it. After week 4, I did not think that New England would be back in the Super Bowl this year. I thought that there were obvious flaws in this team defensively. I don't know that they ever addressed those, you know, the needs, but I think they progressed, obviously. They figured it out. I thought there were too many holes on this team defensively for New England to get back to the Super Bowl. I thought that they were in a lot of trouble. This, to me, was not comparable to 2 years ago when they started off, 2-2 or 2-3? I can't remember what the record was. And then they just went on a tear and they ended up beating Seattle in the Super Bowl. To me, this is completely different. I'm not shocked that New England's in the Super Bowl, but I'll be the first to say I didn't expect New England to be back based on what they had personnel-wise defensively, Brian.
I totally agree with you, and I think they got saved by not playing the Pittsburgh Steelers in the AFC Championship game, because I think Pittsburgh would be in this game today. I think it would be Pittsburgh, but obviously Pittsburgh had its flaws against the Jacksonville Jaguars, and New England was able to take care of the Jaguars, so that's why we're here. But I really strongly believe that with Brown, Bell, and that whole mix, I think it would have been Pittsburgh in the Super Bowl, but that's neither here nor there. We're here to talk about the Pats and the Eagles, and the Pats are just on an unbelievable run, and I totally agree with you. I think this team is just, I mean, you can't even say anything about them. You just have to respect their excellence and respect the fact that they're the best dynasty of all time. I mean, what else can you say about them?
Yeah, win or lose on Sunday.
Rushmore.
Win or lose on Sunday. There's no question this is the greatest dynasty in the history of the NFL. And I know there's a lot of Patriot haters out there. Look, trust me, I understand. I understand why people have a problem with the New England Patriots. But this team may be one of the greatest dynasties in all of professional sports. 20, 25 years from now, we're going to be talking about this as the greatest 15 to 18-year run, whatever it is, 16-year run for the Patriots. It's one of the greatest runs in the history of professional sports.
No doubt. And you could put it up there with Phil Jackson, Michael Jordan, Phil Jackson with Kobe Bryant and Shaquille O'Neal, or Irvin Johnson with Pat Riley. And Joe Torre, Derek Jeter, and that group of Yankees. It's just unbelievable. I mean, look, and to say those teams were a five, 6 year, 8 year run. This team is going on year 18 with the same quarterback, same head coach. That's been a constant. I mean, that's just ludicrous. I mean, you could say Greg Popovich and Tim Duncan, but at the same time, they went through a rough stretch where they were, you know, I'm not going to say they were a bottom tier team, but they weren't the best team in the NBA. But I mean, it's just really impressive what they've been able to accomplish as a unit, and it's just amazing, and that can happen in the NFL. And that's why, you know, people like to say, hey, if Brady wins on Sunday, he passes Michael Jordan as the greatest American athlete that ever lived. So that's something that people are saying, and it may be true. Brady, words can't even express how great that guy is. Is he the most talented quarterback I've ever seen? Probably not. I would probably say Rodgers or Peyton Manning, but man, you just can't deny his greatness and his winning. His winning is just everything that I guess every NFL fan and every NFL team wants to have.
No, I agree with you. That's up for debate, who the greatest American sports athlete of all time is. But yeah, he's definitely in that conversation. I don't think there's any doubt about it. But Brian, if we look at this on paper, I'm of the mindset that we have a closer game than many people want to believe. Okay, I'm not writing off Philadelphia in this game at all. I don't think they win, but I think that Philadelphia deserves a little bit more respect. I was the first to say this team was done when Nick Foles went down. I was the first. When Carson Wentz went down and they had to go to Nick Foles, I was the first to say that. Fact is, Nick Foles has answered the call. I mean, he has been more than a ready quarterback. In fact, you look at it, Philadelphia probably has a great chance to turn Nick Foles into something at the end of the season if they want to get some sort of value back for him, considering Carson Wentz comes back. But we go on beyond that. I mean, there's so many matchups in this game that lead me to believe that Philadelphia they have an outside chance to win this game, but they will definitely make it a game. I don't see a blowout on Sunday. I just don't.
I don't either. And to be honest with you, if you really just look at it, obviously the quarterback and head coach are the most important positions. But other than that, you favor Philadelphia and everything else. D-line, O-line, receivers, running backs, tight ends, everything. Linebackers, pass rushers, everything. Special teams. Special teams, New England has an advantage in my opinion, but other than that, offensively and defensively, you say Philadelphia is much better than New England in every category. I mean, secondary, everything. I mean, it's going to be a close game in my opinion. Do I think New England wins at the end? Probably. Do I think Philadelphia makes it really close? Yeah, I do. And here, going back to what you said about Foles and Wentz and all that, Philadelphia is a team that hasn't won a Super Bowl ever.
Right.
To a couple. If Nick Foles is the guy that wins the Super Bowl for the Philadelphia Eagles. Do you trade away the guy that just won you the Super Bowl?
Yes, absolutely. Because Carson Wentz, look, here's the difference between Nick Foles and Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz was an MVP. He was the front runner in the MVP race. I think that the Philadelphia Eagles, they put a better team around Carson Wentz. I mean, again, you go over, and I agree with you, you look at most of the single matchups, and I do believe that talent-wise it benefits Philadelphia, and we can talk about that in just a moment. Yeah, there's a lot of talent around Carson Wentz, but at the same time, this kid, for only being a second year in the NFL, what he's able to do in the pocket impresses the hell out of me every time I watch him. This kid can make throws while getting hit. He's got Big Ben's body, okay? And he also has the smarts of a seasoned vet in year two, and we're talking about a kid that came from the FCS. Mentally, I think Carson Wentz is on another level. I really do. I think he's made Nick Foles' job a lot easier too, Brian.
I totally agree with you in terms of that, but at the same time, the guy just won you a Super Bowl. I mean, it's an interesting thing. Obviously, you're going to go with Wentz, younger, more talented, everything. You know, you probably would win the game by two touchdowns if he was playing, but at the same time, you're here now, and this guy is the one that won you the Super Bowl. I think it's a little bit more of a question than people are actually saying. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, this dude just came in, won you the Super Bowl, and you're going to give him away or trade him away. You might have to, obviously, because you have Wentz, but I think it's something Philadelphia might think about, but it's neither here nor there because I really don't expect Philadelphia to win the game, but I do expect them to keep it really close.
Again, we're being joined right now by Brian Mejia, our NFL Drive Time Sports Insider. You mentioned the matchups and how they favor Philadelphia in most cases, going head-to-head matchups, position by position. At the same time, I go back and I look at the previous seven Super Bowl appearances for New England. Not only the games they won, but the seven that they've appeared in. You could make that case in multiple instances. You know, you go back to where it started. There was not more talent on this New England team than on that St. Louis Ram Greatest Show on Turf team. There wasn't. I think you go back to the last time New England went toe-to-toe with Philadelphia. That Eagles team was pretty good. And Donovan McNabb, I mentioned this on the show yesterday. I think people forget how good Donovan McNabb was in that Super Bowl. Carolina,
quarterback, yeah.
Yeah, he was great. I think they may have had more talent than Carolina. I don't think they had more talent than Seattle a couple of seasons ago. I don't believe that they had more talent last year than Atlanta on both sides of the football. I don't.
No.
And so there's something about the Patriots. And again, that's why you can look at matchups on paper. And on paper, this looks like a pretty compelling game. I get that. But there's something about this Patriots team. And I don't know if you agree with me here, but going back over the past seven Super Bowls, I think you can make an instance, maybe four, maybe even pushing it five times, the opposing team has looked better than New England on paper, Brian.
Right. And then, well, obviously the most lopsided one, and it's crazy, but 2007, the Pats were the most talented team of all time. You could make a case for that against the Giants, and we know who ended up winning that game. And then in 2011, to me in 2011, that version of the Pats, when they lost to the Giants the second time, that was the best Patriots offense I had ever seen. And I thought that Patriots offense was better than 2007, actually. And I the only reason why they lost that game, I think, because of the defense. Defense wasn't too, but that Patriots offense in 2011, Brady's numbers were 5,500 yards, 40 touchdowns. It was just, he put up some crazy, crazy numbers that year. But, yeah, like you were saying, most, and then the Hawks in 2014, I thought it was so lopsided in 2014. I thought the Hawks were going to boat race them out of the stadium the way they boat raced the Broncos, but obviously Belichick and Brady are a different beast than Peyton Manning leading a bunch of scrubs to the Super Bowl, but that's neither here nor there. But at the same time, yeah, you're right. Most of the time, Atlanta was a much better team than New England. Obviously, the 28-3 proves that, but then obviously Brady's so great and he came back. But yeah, most of the time they have been outclassed in terms of talent, but at the same time, the same constant of all time, of all this time, of all these Super Bowls is Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, and Matt Patricia and Josh McDaniels. Just out-scheming and out-playing and out-patriating their opponents.
Outpatriating. I like that. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. In this game, I do want to talk about Seattle. I want to get your thoughts on Seattle here for just a moment. Defensively, obviously, all eyes are going to be on what they can do in the middle of the field. So you throw a Michael Kendricks, a Danelle Ellerbe, and a Nigel Broadham at the opposing team defensively. Look, that's not bad. That's not bad at all. For me in this game, Philadelphia needs to score. I think Philadelphia doesn't need to score defensively. They need to make a big play at some point in time defensively to change the course of the game. I think that's what you have to do with New England. You have to get them off schedule, and you do that by forcing some turnovers, maybe, you know, presenting a short field for Nick Foles at some point in time. Look no further than that linebacking core. I think it's a very underrated aspect of this team. I don't think they get enough pub, Brian. Not as much as they should.
No, they don't. And obviously, Jim Schwartz has that unit playing well. The one thing that I will say, Jordan, that you're going to have to look at on Sunday is the Patriots are going to run a lot of no huddle. I believe that the Philadelphia Eagles are a team that, well, Jim Schwartz, and I've seen him play a couple times this year, obviously. So Jim Schwartz likes to substitute his D lineman. He likes to have fresh bodies out there all the time. Tom Brady, Josh McDaniels are, I'm 1,000% sure, are going to not let Jim Schwartz substitute. I think he's going to wear down those defensive linemen, which is the strength of the Philadelphia Eagles defense. And I think that he's going to wear that team out. I think Tom Brady is going to keep them on the field, and he's going to dink and dunk his way to touchdowns. And I think that's the way the Patriots are going to win that game, because I don't think Jim Schwartz is going to be allowed to make any changes like he usually does. The linebackers stay the same. Obviously, Kendrick gets off the field on third down because he's going to nickel, but I really don't feel like Jim Schwartz is going to be able to substitute as much as he usually does.
Well, maybe not, but he may have to. And I think this is also something to keep an eye on. Timmy Jernigan, he may be one of my favorite players on this Eagles team. I love Timmy Jernigan. I love what he can, you know, what type of dynamic he brings to a defense. He's been held out of practice pretty much all week because of an illness. And that should be some sort of a concern. He says he feels great, but the fact is he hasn't practiced this week. And then you couple that with the idea of Fletcher Cox missing some time because of a calf injury. And then you look at Danelle Ellerbe, who has a hamstring injury. I know they were full participants this past Wednesday. And at this point in time, is anyone really truly healthy? But at the same time, when these guys are listed on an injury report and you talk about an up-tempo Patriots defense or offense, excuse me, that's something to be concerned about for Philadelphia.
Exactly, and that's where I think the football game is going to be won. I don't think Brady's going to let them substitute, and I feel like he always does. Notice something. Tom Brady's played in 7 Super Bowls, Jordan. He's never had a touchdown pass go longer than 50 yards. He's had 15 touchdown passes in the Super Bowl. 14 of them have been in the red zone.
Wow.
14 red zone touchdowns. So that means he thinks and dunks his way to the end zone every time he has the ball in his hand.
And they've never scored a touchdown in the first quarter of a Super Bowl.
That is just the most staggering stat of all this, of how great they are and everything. They've never scored a touchdown in the first quarter. That's crazy to me.
It is. It's
crazy.
It's nuts.
And, you know, obviously the Pats are the Pats. If it was the Giants, then everybody would be picking the Giants. But obviously the Eagles, I mean, I want to say Philadelphia's going to win, Jordan, just because of those individual matchups. You know, and honestly, honest to goodness, I don't want to say swear to God or anything like that, but I would definitely pick the Wentz-led Eagles to win this game, and I think they'd blow them out. Because if you're going to beat the Patriots, Jordan, you're going to have to play a 60-minute football game, and you're not going to be like Jacksonville. You're not going to be like Atlanta. You're going to keep the pedal to the metal. And Doug Peterson, and what he proved to me in the NFC Championship game and what he's proved to me this whole year, Doug Peterson, Frank Reich, and that whole offensive staff, they put the pedal to the metal. They're going to keep scoring touchdowns. They don't care about field goals. I mean, against Atlanta, obviously, they have to score all those field goals because they couldn't get a touchdown. But they're going to keep scoring and running up the score if they have to. They're not going to let you, you know, just stand back and not win and score on soft zones and nothing like that. They're going to keep the pedal to the metal, and they're going to keep scoring, and they're going to keep playing their defense. That's something that I really love about Philadelphia.
All right, Brian, every time we get you on, we always end with some rapid fire. You got time for one more session of rapid fire here in the season?
Let's do it. Let's do it. I'm ready. I'm so amped up for this game.
Who wins the Super Bowl?
I just gave you a sermon on why I think Philadelphia could win, but I can't bet against Tom Brady. Tom Brady.
Yeah, I agree with you. You can't go against Tom Brady. So you're going to take the Patriots?
Yes.
Okay.
27-23.
Patriots win your Super Bowl, according to Brian Mejia. Let's move over to NFL awards, okay? We know that Alvin Kamara is the rookie of the year. Have no problem with that. Probably should have won the award. Let me throw some others at you. Offensive player of the year, who does that go to?
Todd Gurley.
Defensive player of the year.
I'm going to go Calais Campbell.
I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that. I agree with you. Calais Campbell was absolutely phenomenal, and that was the reason why the Jacksonville Jaguars, a lot of the reason why the Jacksonville Jaguars made it all the way to the AFC Championship. I agree with that. Rookie of the year.
Alvin Kamara.
Comeback player of the year.
Little homer in me, but I'm going to say Marshawn Lynch.
See, I got to go with Case Keenum.
He was good, obviously, but I think in terms of comeback, I mean, he was retired, and he came back, and, you know, he ran the ball good for the Raiders. But I wouldn't be mad at Case Keenum.
Coach of the year?
Doug Peterson.
Over Sean McVay?
Yes.
Ooh.
Look at what he had to deal with in terms of injuries and where he has his team. Other than that, I would have said McVay, you know, if the Eagles weren't in the Super Bowl, but obviously, these awards were handed out before the Super Bowl, but I could see why McVay. But looking at everything now, I would probably say Doug Peterson.
And who's your MVP?
Tom Brady.
It's got to go to a quarterback. I think the MVP should be Todd Gurley. But at the end of the day, I know it goes to quarterbacks. I know this. It goes to quarterbacks.
That's what I was going to tell you. If it was up to me, and I'm probably being a little contradictory of what I just said, I would pick Todd Gurley. But at the same time, you have to look at, you know, if the Rams made it to the divisional round and NFC Championship game, I think more people would have said Gurley, but you can't. Tom Brady's Tom Brady. I guess he needed another award before he actually retired or left, whatever.
Brian Mejia, our NFL Drive Time Sports Insider. Always great to get you on, buddy. I know we'll talk again real soon. Enjoy the Super Bowl on Sunday, and we'll go with an NFL recap next week.
Sounds good, buddy. Have a good one. Enjoy the Super Bowl.
You too. Thank you. That's Brian Mejia, our NFL Drive Time Sports Insider. He's joined us now for the last couple of years to talk NFL, and now we get his thoughts on Super Bowl 52 Sunday. We got a break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return.
Live from the KOAL newsroom in Price, Utah, it's Drive Time Sports on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Take that for data.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL, 107.3 FM, 750 AM. Super Bowl 52 on Sunday, but tomorrow night we have the NFL Honors Show. Takes place on the eve of the Super Bowl. It'll be at the Cyrus Northrop Memorial Auditorium on the campus of the University of Minnesota. Among the awards that'll be handed out tomorrow, MVP, which I think has very little drama this year, Offensive and Defensive Player of the Year, Offensive and Defensive Rookie of the Year, and, of course, Coach of the Year. Again, some of these races, in my opinion, have very little drama, but let's take a look at them. First off, MVP. Right now, Vegas has Tom Brady as minus 300 to win the MVP trophy, which means you'd have to bet $300 to win 100. Todd Gurley would be second at plus 200. Tom Brady went over 4,000 yards passing for the sixth time in the last seven seasons, led the NFL with 4,577 yards. He was fantastic. Ranked top five in completion percentage, passing touchdowns, quarterback rating, only threw eight picks all year long. Isn't that something? He threw eight interceptions all season long. Yeah, he was spectacular. And we talked about this last segment. I doubted New England getting back to the Super Bowl this year. I really did. I doubted New England getting back because of defense. Tom Brady is a large part of the reason why the Patriots are in the Super Bowl. But he also has Bill Belichick. He has some proven commodities offensively. I think he's got the greatest tight end to ever play the game of football when he's healthy in Rob Gronkowski. And the defense played much, much better over the second half of the season. I say Todd Gurley should be the MVP. If you listen to the show enough, you know I got a little Ram bias. But at the same time, he was second in rushing, ran for 1,300 yards, would have won the rushing crown had he played in Week 17. Sean McVay elected to sit the starters. He had 788 receiving yards. And look, he had a phenomenal December. I think if he would have been able to do a little bit more on the field in January, this would be a much closer race. But at the same time, I think you really got to consider Gurley. You got to consider the fact that this team was dead last year in the NFC West. had the worst offense in football, and Gurley looked reborn. Goes over 2,000 yards from scrimmage. I would have to say Todd Gurley wins the MVP. If I was voting, I would vote for Gurley. But I also understand that it is a quarterback's trophy. Tom Brady was phenomenal this season. So I don't call it highway robbery. I'm not going to that extent. I would go Gurley. Brady is going to win this award. And I don't know that you can argue it. I think you could have a choice. You know, who would you rather see, Gurley or Brady? But at the end of the day, yeah, I got no problem with Brady winning it. I just prefer Gurley. I think Gurley should win it this season. Offensive player of the year. Todd Gurley will win this. And there is a difference between MVP and, you know, and offensive player of the year. Again, I'm talking about Todd Gurley recording over 2,000 yards from scrimmage. He had a game this season. He had 158 receiving yards and 118 rushing yards in the same game. That's insane, isn't it? That's when the Rams beat the Titans and clinched the NFC West. That's a real stat. It's not a video game. 158 receiving yards and 118 rushing yards. He's easily going to win Offensive Player of the Year. He's not really the only worthy candidate, though. And I think that this was proof in the playoffs. Antonio Brown was phenomenal again for Pittsburgh. The guy's the real deal. And, of course, you have to mention Tom Brady because we went over what that guy accomplished individually statistic-wise for the Patriots. So I think you have a couple of other players in the running, but Todd Gurley has got to be the overwhelming favorite to win Offensive Player of the Year. Again, there is a difference between MVP and Offensive Player when you're considering Brady against Gurley. Defensive Player of the Year, you know what? I have to agree with Brian last segment. He gave it to Calais Campbell, and that's where I would go with it. You know, Calais Campbell was so great this year. He had 14.5 sacks, and he plays on the league's best defense. So, yeah, I think the best defensive player of the year was Calais Campbell. Jacksonville also went to the AFC Championship. That accounts for something. But don't count out Chandler Jones. He led the league in sacks with 17. Did play for a team that was at 500 in Arizona. I think DeMarcus Lawrence, a defensive end for Dallas, should probably be mentioned in this award as well. He had 14.5 sacks, 4 forced fumbles. He was pretty good. And then Cameron Jordan in New Orleans had 62 tackles, 13 sacks. There's a lot of individuals that were close to Calais Campbell. But again, if you watched enough Jacksonville football, you know what I mean when I say the defense revolved around him. He was kind of the catalyst for that entire defensive unit that really was so close to playing to on Sunday instead of New England. Go ahead and give it to Calais Campbell. I think he wins that award. Offensive Rookie of the Year, we already talked about this. Alvin Kamara, I don't think there's any doubt. His accomplishments are even more impressive when you look at the fact that he played alongside Mark Ingram, and Ingram was still the first option in several different instances throughout the entire year. Kareem Hunt would have probably have won the award if he didn't have that slump for about 4 or 5 weeks. Fantasy owners, you know exactly what I'm talking about. It's got to go to Alvin Kamara. Defensive Rookie of the Year. I think this goes to a Saint player as well. I think we're going to see Alvin Kamara. Well, Kamara's already won the Offensive Rookie of the Year, but I think we're also going to see Latimer get it defensively as well. This guy was not only one of the top rookies this past season, he was one of the best defenders in the entire NFL. He was picked 11th overall this past draft, had 18 defended passes, recorded 5 picks, and we were just talking about how the Jaguars probably should be playing on Sunday. Like, they had New England exactly where they wanted him. And it's a big standout to that defense. And looking at Calais Campbell, you could say the same thing with New Orleans. They had Minnesota beat, right? It should have been New Orleans and Philadelphia, right? If Case Keenum doesn't pull out an incredible play and everything just falls to pieces for New Orleans on the final play from scrimmage, they move on. Marshawn Lattimore, yeah, I think hands down, this guy's a defensive rookie of the year. Coach of the year, it can't be Doug Peterson. I'm sorry. It just can't be. I've watched so much Los Angeles Ram football, St. Louis Ram football. Team has been so putrid for the past decade and a half. Sean McVay comes in, and he takes a guy like Jared Goff, who a lot of people were calling a bust at the end of last season. A lot of people were calling Jared Goff a bust. Puts a new offensive scheme in, brings in a new coaching staff. Todd Gurley goes from a massive sophomore slump to being in the same conversation as Tom Brady for MVP. Jared Goff had a very successful year. The Rams make the playoffs for the first time since 2004, and they did it running away, topping the likes of Seattle, Arizona, and San Francisco, and they had a couple of marquee wins this year as well. Hands down, coach of the year has to be Sean McVay. No questions asked, right? Doug Peterson, to me, at the beginning of the season, we viewed Philadelphia as really being one of the front runners to come out of the NFC. Okay, so that's why I don't give the coach of the year to Doug Peterson. I understand that Carson Wentz goes down. I get that. And trust me, I wrote off Nick Foles. Doug Peterson's done a phenomenal job with that team. When they acquired Jay Ajayi, I think everyone expected Philadelphia to represent the NFC in the Super Bowl. And so it's not so much, it's an expectation for Philadelphia to be there this year. Carson Wentz was the MVP, I think, before he went down. It would be a three-pony race instead of a two-pony race right now if Carson Wentz does not go down. To me, hands down, it's got to be Sean McVay. The Rams were horrible last year. Downright pathetic. Sean McVay, coach of the year. That's how I would go with the awards. I think McVay wins coach of the year. Again, Lattimore's got to win defensive rookie of the year. Kamara's already won offensive rookie of the year. Tom Brady is going to win MVP. I think there's a picture that's already surfaced of an acceptance speech for Tom Brady to win the award. So we know he's got that. Give Calais Campbell defensive player of the year, please. That's the other one I'm really praying for. A guy deserves it. Give Jacksonville some love. You know, you want to talk about great turnarounds, throw Doug Marrone in there for coach of the year as well. I think I'd give the nod to Marrone before I gave it to Peterson, based off expectations and based off accomplishments. Tomorrow night, the NFL Honor Show. We've got a break for just a moment. We'll come back and put the final touches on this week of Drive Time Sports when we return on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Hey, what's going on? This is Ron Artest, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini. Shout out to Queensbridge, you already know.
We're back to close out this week of Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM, 750 AM. Enjoy Super Bowl 52. And again, if you can't watch the game, don't forget we have it for you right here on KOAL. Live coverage is going to begin at 12. Kickoff set for 4:30. Enjoy the game, but enjoy it responsibly. If you're going to drink, don't drive. Come on, it's Super Bowl. It's supposed to be the best Sunday of the year, right? It's our right as Americans to do nothing on Sunday but sit on the couch, eat snacks, and watch football. And I'll probably drink a large amount of soda on Sunday, too. Can't wait for the game. I want to thank Brian Mejia for always taking out the time to join us. I love the conversations with Brian. The guy knows football inside and out, so I appreciate his time today on the show. Coming up tonight, 6:30, Landon's Diesel Service pregame show. I'll be joined with Scott Labrum, and we'll talk Emory High School basketball as the Spartans get set to do battle with the Manti Templars. You can listen to the game live as well at CastleCountryRadio.com. Just click on the KOAL Listen Live link. That's coming up at 6:30. And tomorrow, doubleheader action as the USU Eastern women and men's squads take the court against CSI. Sonny Buscarini, Greg Dart will bring you the play-by-play call beginning at 2:30 with the women's game. The men will follow shortly after, and we'll see if the men can't continue on this little winning streak they put together with wins over Colorado and Salt Lake, and then, of course, the Super Bowl on Sunday. So have a great weekend. I will catch you back here in just a bit for Emory High School basketball, and then I'll see you Monday right here on 107.3 FM, 750 AM. Be safe. I am out.